Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. For decades, scientists thought that half of the human genome was basically just a graveyard of ancient dead viruses and junk DNA. But what really happens when this so-called junk turns out to be the very thing building our human brains? I mean, how could this completely change our understanding of what separates us from other primates? In today's deep dive, our mission for you is to explore exactly how jumping genes actually wire our earliest development.
It is honestly one of the most fascinating paradigm shifts in genomics right now.
It really is. And before we get into it, today we celebrate the work of Anita Adami, Johan Jakobsen, and their research team at Lund University and collaborating international institutions who've advanced our understanding of early human brain development and genomics.
Yeah, their work here is just incredibly elegant. It tackles a problem that, frankly, a lot of people thought was technically impossible to solve.
Okay, let's unpack this. We've known for a while, you know, that transposable elements make up at least 50% of the human genome.
Right, half of your entire DNA code.
Yeah. But today, we are zeroing in on one specific family called long interspersed nuclear elements 1, or just L1s for short. And this single family of elements makes up a massive 17% of your DNA.
17%, just let that sink in.
It's huge. And the long-held assumption was that because these elements can, you know, jump around and cause devastating mutations, our mammalian cells must have evolved to strictly silence them during embryogenesis,
right?
Like keep them locked down.
Exactly. And this paper basically takes that entire assumption and flips it on its head.
So to appreciate this, we need the historical context. How do these L1s actually operate in the genome?
Well, it's a fundamental shift in our understanding of genomic architecture, because L1s are the only autonomously mobilizing family of transposable elements in humans.
Wait, autonomously mobilizing, meaning they move on their own?
Yeah, they carry their own biological machinery. Specifically, they have an enzyme called reverse transcriptase. So they transcribe themselves into RNA, and then they use that enzyme to reverse transcribe themselves right back into a brand new spot in your DNA.
They literally copy and paste themselves.
They do. And because of this copy and paste mechanism, they have been colonizing our genomes in successive waves for millions of years.
Hold on. If these L1s are actively jumping around and pasting themselves into random locations, aren't stem cells incredibly vulnerable?
Oh, absolutely.
Because I've always learned that the cell uses epigenetic mechanisms like DNA methylation to completely lock down these elements. It's like pouring thick concrete over a light switch so it can't be flipped on. Why would a developing embryo allow any of this jumping activity during its most fragile foundational state?
And that paradox is exactly the core scientific problem researchers have been facing. On one hand, yes, an embryo desperately needs to protect its genomic integrity. I mean, if an L1 lands right in the middle of a vital developmental gene, it could be catastrophic.
Right, it could just break the gene entirely.
Exactly. But on the other hand, recent transcriptome studies started showing these weird hints that L1s were actually highly active during the very early stages of human embryonic development.
Wait, really? The concrete was like chipped away?
Yeah, they were turned on. The problem is, figuring out exactly what they are doing in human embryos has been a massive technical roadblock.
Because they're highly repetitive, right? You mentioned they copy and paste themselves, so there must be, what, hundreds of thousands of copies scattered around?
500,000 copies, to be precise.
Wow.
And to complicate things even further, they vary vastly between species. So the L1s in a mouse genome are evolutionarily distinct from the L1s in a human genome. You can't just study a mouse brain to understand how these elements function in humans. You have to study human cells.
Wait, I'm stuck on something here regarding methodology. Let's say you have 500,000 identical, or at least nearly identical, copies of a gene scattered across the human genome.
Right.
Traditional CRISPR acts like molecular scissors to cut DNA. So if you use CRISPR to target a sequence that appears 500,000 times, you're not making a precision cut. You're putting the entire genome through a paper shredder.
That is exactly what would happen.
The cell would trigger apoptosis and die instantly. So how did this team get around that without just blowing up the cell?
That paper shredder scenario is precisely why studying L1s has been so notoriously difficult. To solve this, the research team designed a highly innovative multi-omics approach. They started by using human-induced pluripotent stem cells, or HIPSCs.
Okay, remind us how those work.
Sure, so these are adult cells like skin or blood cells that have been biochemically reprogrammed to return to an embryonic-like pluripotent state. This gives the researchers a blank canvas. And from there, they also grew 3D cerebral organoids.
We did those miniature brain models.
Exactly. They are self-organizing tissue models that mimic the complex architecture of a developing human brain right in a laboratory dish.
Okay, so you have a human brain model in a dish, which is an incredible starting point. But you still have the sequencing problem. If all 500,000 L1 puzzle pieces look completely identical, how do you know which specific copy is the active one?
Well, standard short read sequencing simply cannot handle that level of repetition. It breaks the DNA into tiny fragments, reads them, and tries to reassemble them. If all the pieces are just plain blue sky, you can't tell where they go in the puzzle.
Right, you're just guessing at that point.
So the researchers use long read Oxford nanopore DNA and RNA sequencing. This technology literally pulls a single long strand of DNA or RNA through a microscopic pore.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it reads the sequence based on disruptions in an electrical current, so it captures entire unbroken L1 transcripts. This allows the scientists to map the transcript back to the exact specific L1 copy in the genome.
That neatly solves the mapping issue, but how do they physically find the active ones in the first place? The paper mentions CTNR Nguyen epigenomic profiling. How does that physically work in the lab?
CTNR is a beautiful technique for mapping where proteins interact with DNA. The researchers were looking for a specific histone modification called H3K4ME3.
Okay, let's break that down. Histones are the spools.
Yeah. Think of histones as the spools that DNA wraps around. When a histone gets this specific H3K4ME3 biochemical tag, it physically loosens the DNA, acting as a green light for transcription.
Ah, so it's marking the active zones.
Exactly. So in CTNUN, you use an antibody that specifically binds to that green light tag. That antibody is tethered to an enzyme that snips the DNA right at that exact location.
So you're basically anchoring a pair of scissors to the green light.
You got it. Then you wash away the rest of the genome, sequence those tiny snip fragments, and you have a high-resolution map of exactly where the active L1 promoters are located.
Okay, so they can map the active ones, and they can read the full sequences with a nanopore. But going back to my paper shredder problem, how do they actually silence these L1s to see what they do without destroying the DNA?
This was the critical innovative step. They optimized a CRISPR interference system known as CRISPR.
Interference, so not cutting.
Right. Instead of using a standard Cas9 protein to cut the DNA, they used a catalytically inactive Cas9. Its molecular scissors were basically dulled, and they fused this inactive Cas9 to something called a K-Rab repressor.
What does the K-Rab repressor do?
It's a powerful protein domain that forcefully shuts down gene transcription in its immediate vicinity. Finally, they designed guide RNAs to specifically target the promoter region, the 5-foot UTR of only the evolutionarily young hominoid-specific L1s.
So these are the L1HS and L1PA2 subfamilies.
Exactly. Just the young ones unique to our evolutionary lineage.
I love this. It's like instead of ripping the pages out of a book, which would completely ruin the structural integrity of the book, you're just putting a heavy do not read sticker over the first page of a specific chapter.
That is a perfect way to visualize it.
And so the CRISPR method acts as that sticker, allowing scientists to see exactly what happens when the cell simply skips that section without damaging the underlying DNA.
What's fascinating here is the sheer elegance and precision of that solution. By placing that molecular sticker perfectly at the start site of the young L1s, they achieved incredibly efficient on-target silencing. For the first time, they could cleanly observe what happens to early human development when you turn these viral hitchhikers off.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because when they applied that sticker, the results completely shattered the old paradigm.
They really did.
The team revealed that thousands of these hominoid-specific L1s, meaning L1s unique to apes and humans, are highly expressed in human-induced pluripotent stem cells.
The CRISPR silencing worked exceptionally well, and the data it generated is extraordinary. The researchers discovered that these young L1s were not just making selfish copies of themselves.
So what were they doing?
They were acting as alternative promoters for nearly 100 different protein-coding genes and long non-coding RNAs right inside these human pluripotent stem cells.
Wait, how does a jumping gene that pasted itself into the genome completely at random actually drive a human gene?
Mm.
Physically, how does an alternative promoter work in this context?
The mechanism is called an antisense promoter. Imagine a crucial human gene is a set of train tracks designed to build a specific protein. And L1 pastes itself somewhere nearby.
Okay, following the train tracks.
So the L1 has its own internal promoter to drive its own transcription, but sometimes that promoter faces the opposite direction of the L1 sequence itself. It acts like a second train engine placed in the middle of the track facing backwards.
Oh, I see.
Right? So it starts driving transcription in the reverse direction directly into the neighboring human gene. This creates a totally unique human-specific transcript.
It's basically a brand new version of that gene that wouldn't even exist without the L1 engine driving it.
Exactly.
That is wild. Can we ground this a bit? Instead of just stating that it affects 100 genes, what is one specific example of this happening in a human cell? Like, how does this change the actual brain?
A perfect example from the study is the gene ELAPOR2. This gene is heavily involved in crucial pathways for brain development, like cellular adhesion and helping neurons connect to each other.
Okay, so a major structural player.
Very major. And the data clearly shows that in human stem cells, ELAPOR2 heavily relies on an L1 antisense promoter to create a human-specific version, an isoform of its transcript.
So the L1 is literally required to generate the specific flavor of ELAPOR2 that human brains need.
Yes, exactly. And they found a similar mechanism driving a long non-coding RNA called LENNC00648. When the researchers placed their CRISPR-y do not read sticker on the L1s, the expression of these unique human-specific transcripts just plummeted.
So we know the transcripts plummet, but what does that mean for the actual cells? When they took these stem cells with the silenced L1s and tried to grow them into those 3D cerebral organoids, what actually happened?
The macroscopic results were striking. Silencing the L1s did not stop the cells from being pluripotent. They maintained their stem cell state without any obvious distress.
So the stem cells were fine just sitting there.
Right. However, when the researchers chemically prompted those stem cells to begin the complex process of differentiating into brain tissue, the whole system broke down. The L1 silenced organoids were significantly smaller and structurally impaired compared to the control organoids.
Why specifically smaller? Like, what was failing inside the organoid?
The researchers dug into the single-cell RNA sequencing data to answer that exact question. They looked at the thousands of individual cells making up the organoid and found that the transcriptome was severely altered, specifically in a population called neural progenitor cells.
And those are the precursors to neurons.
Exactly. These are the crucial parent cells that must rapidly divide and eventually specialize to become the billions of neurons and glial cells in your brain.
So without the L1s acting as alternative promoters,
those neural progenitor cells simply could not execute their differentiation programs correctly. Their growth stunted and the organoid failed to develop properly.
So, to correct my earlier thought, these L1s aren't just passive hitchhikers. They are more like subcontractors who bring their own specialized blueprints to the construction site. If you lock them out, the basic foundation of the stem cell is fine, but the specialized architecture of the human brain never gets built.
That is an excellent way to conceptualize it. Hmm. The subcontractors are absolutely essential for the final structure. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the evolutionary significance of this mechanism is staggering.
How so?
Think about it. We share the vast majority of our fundamental DNA with mice, dogs, and chimpanzees. But these hominoid-specific L1 insertions provide a totally unique, highly dynamic layer of transcriptional complexity.
Because they only jumped into our lineage recently.
Exactly, relatively recently in evolutionary history. So this network of L1 alternative promoters might literally be the genetic wiring that differentiates human brain development from that of other mammals. It provided an evolutionary sandbox that allowed our brains to rapidly experiment and become what they are today.
Wow. If you're listening to this and wondering why scientists went through all this incredible trouble just to silence a repetitive gene, think about it this way. This is about understanding the exact timing and the precise blueprints of how our brains wire themselves in the womb.
Absolutely. And that raises an important question regarding the clinical implications. Human brain development is heavily, heavily dependent on precise developmental timing.
Right. Everything has to happen on a strict schedule.
Yes. If a neural progenitor cell differentiates a day too early or a day too late, the structural integrity of the brain changes. The dysregulation of these young L1s, whether through mutations or environmental factors that alter that concrete methylation layer prematurely, could lead to severe neurodevelopmental or psychiatric disorders.
Oh, that makes sense.
In fact, the study notes that many of the genes driven by these L1 alternative promoters are already implicated in these exact types of disorders.
So what does this all mean? We have a massive breakthrough, showing that viral hitchhikers basically build our brains. But no study is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
What are the boundaries here? What can't this do not read sticker tell us?
Well, we have to be very precise about the limitations the authors themselves noted. First and foremost, while the CRISPR tool is incredibly powerful for silencing, it cannot distinguish between cis-acting and trans-acting mechanisms.
Okay, let's break that down. What is the physical difference between those two mechanisms?
Cis-acting means the L1 is regulating a gene right next door on the same piece of DNA, like the local train engine we discussed with LOPR2.
Right, the train on the same track.
Yes. Transacting, on the other hand, means the L1 produces an RNA molecule, or even a protein, that travels across the cell like a cargo ship to cause an effect somewhere else entirely.
Oh, I see.
Because the CRISPR system places a physical roadblock directly on the DNA at the starting line, it stops both processes simultaneously. It stops the local train, and it prevents the cargo ship from ever being built.
So you don't know which one was doing the heavy lifting?
Exactly. Because both are stopped, we can't be 100% certain if the stunted organoid growth is caused purely by the local cis regulation, or if the lack of floating transacting RNA is also playing a major role.
That makes total sense. The roadblock stops the whole factory line at the source, so you can't parse out which specific missing product caused the building to collapse. Are there any other blind spots in this method?
Yes. Another major limitation involves read-through transcripts. Sometimes cellular transcription machinery starts at a normal human gene and just plows right through an adjacent L1 sequence, incorporating it into a massive, longer transcript.
So the transcription just ignores the stop signs.
Basically, yeah. And since the CRISPR sticker is placed specifically at the L1 starting line, it won't stop a train that started miles down the track and is just passing through.
Oh, right. Because the sticker is only at the L1 promoter.
Exactly. Therefore, those read-through transcripts aren't silenced in this model at all. They might have their own vital, undiscovered functions in brain development that we simply aren't seeing yet.
That is a great point.
And lastly, we must always remember that 3D cerebral organoids, while brilliant tools, are still just laboratory models. They carry natural experimental variation, and they lack the complex immune and vascular interactions of true human development in the womb.
Right. It's a brain model in a dish, not a living, breathing human embryo. But, you know, even with those limitations, the sheer weight of the data here is incredibly compelling. If I had to distill this entire deep dive down, I'd say this. Line 1 retrotransposons are far from being just dangerous genetic baggage. They are actually wired into our early developmental networks, acting as essential alternative promoters that drive human-specific brain development. Without them, our neural progenitor cells cannot differentiate and grow properly.
What does this mean for our understanding of neurodevelopmental disorders and human evolution?
And it leaves you with this to mull over independently. If our most uniquely human trait, our complex brain, was built by co-opting ancient viral hitchhikers, what other discarded junk is secretly running the show in our bodies? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Footsteps in the hallway of a billion. chess on the edge. At 1 p.m. in the past. Same family, different uniforms, different spells they cast. Across the primate timeline, the patterns hold and shift. A quiet kind of power, like a hidden stage hands lift. So aim your guide where the repeat meets the glow. Dial the signal lower, see which genes will follow. One target, one.